Good evening and welcome to today's program hosted by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. My name is Angie Cuero and it is my pleasure to introduce Jonathan and Drew Scott, authors of Dream Home, the Property Brothers' Ultimate Guide to Finding and Fixing Your Perfect Home. Jonathan and Drew are co-hosts of four hit television shows on the HGTV network, including the wildly popular Property Brothers. They flipped their first home before they finished college and later became a licensed contractor and a real estate agent. For nearly 15 years now, they've managed their thriving Scott Real Estate Company and run their own production company called Scott Brothers Entertainment. And when they aren't helping people find and renovate their dream homes, they're working on their successful outdoor furniture line. This year, they released their first country music single and video. I know. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Jonathan and Drew Scott.
I will point out I did not style the stage with Scott Living Furniture, but next time I'll bring all of our own stuff.
I should think, yeah. Does this meet with your approval? I mean,
you know, I think I could reupholster and I could resurface, but it's okay.
This is our
sturdy. It's what's in the chair that counts.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming to see us, you guys. It's been a whirlwind book tour for us. We're going city to city, but this is exciting. I've actually never been here or I haven't spent much time here. And so to see you guys, maybe what we should do is we should all petition. I won't even leave until HGTV brings us here to shoot Property Brothers.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You know, the secret that we give everybody, we always say, if you want the show to come to where you are, get social, get online, tell the network. They choose where we go. So tell HGTV, bring us here. We would love it. We live in Vegas, so to be able to take a half-hour flight home would be fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. So.
And we have a hashtag to mention for the evening, do we not?
Yes.
Hashtag dream
Jonathan's
home.
Better. Oh. What?
hashtag Jonathan's hair never moves when he does renovations. How? Yeah, use hashtag Dream Home if you guys, and feel free to take all the pictures you want while we're up here. I just want to see them on social media. We will engage with you. My handle is Mr. Drew Scott, if you didn't know. He is Mr. Silver Scott. Why Silver? Because he's high maintenance.
Yes. That's my middle name.
That's his middle name.
And just to clarify as well, they said afterward we're going to take a bunch of selfies. Not with you guys. We're just going to take a bunch of selfies on our own. No, so there's no rush afterwards. Take your time. We're going to be there. We're going to get through everybody.
We're not leaving until we get a photo with every single one of you. So, I'm even losing my voice. Yeah. I'm already losing my voice. All right.
Who has the book, by the way? Who's read the book? Started thumbing through it a little bit. Excellent. I like all the hands.
Just a little note for you. While we're on stage, if I see heads buried in the book, we're just as special as what's in the book. So look at us. All right. How's it going?
Do you guys need me?
I was going to say, yeah. We talk too much.
Don't leave us, Angie. We need you.
Well, I like the fact that you started out the book with a little bit of your own background, but I noticed something that was missing. And you guys are polymaths. There's so far nothing that you can't do that we've heard of. You know, a magician, a realtor, you know, home renovation, music video, etc. And I was wondering, who are the people that produced these two guys? And you kind of mentioned mom and dad around the fringes in the book, but I know their first surprise was that two of you showed up in the delivery room. That was not expected.
Well, yes. They produced me, and then science and cloning produced Drew.
So, they wanted to improve upon the original.
No, it's true. For those of you who don't know, Drew was actually a surprise. My parents didn't know there were twins. There was no ultrasound back then unless there was a complication.
I like to call it a blessing, not a surprise.
Yes. So we, our heartbeats were exactly in sync throughout my mom's entire pregnancy. She was large. She was like a house. And so when I was born...
I'm telling you said that.
Oh, she'll tell you. When I was born, my head was all squished in. And I guess he'd been sitting on my head in the womb.
That was me.
And
still feels like it's my butt imprint.
It's a
right
little soft. And so after I was born, the doctor actually left. And then the nurse was like, Doctor, I think there's another one. And then my mom brought Drew into the world with, oh, shit.
So... Yeah, it's but it's been uphill since then.
I guess that means I won the original competition. I was born first.
Yeah, you came first. We dedicated the book to our parents as well. Everything we've done in our lives, we started our first job at 7 years old. Does anybody know? Has anybody heard the story? No, a couple of
hands. Won't tell it then.
I won't tell.
That's right.
No, so we were always go-getters, and so we turned seven, and my dad says, "Happy birthday, boys! Get a job." And so we were always go-getters, trying to do something. And so what we actually did, we started making these little decorative hangers. We were putting nylon around hangers with a little rosette. It's something you would see in your grandma's closet, arts and craft kind of thing. And, you know, people were like, oh, that's cute. And we were selling it to friends and friends of friends. But we were go-getters, and we ended up hooking up with this lady who had a chain of American paraphernalia stores in Japan. And she started buying them from us by the thousands. So here we are at seven years old, no influence from our parents, creating this thriving empire of hangers.
Yeah. So we hired our brother and some friends, and we're all sitting there watching cartoons, making hangers. Yeah. It was great. That was our first foray.
Pressure of like, you know, oh God, we wanted them to be lawyers, you know.
Well, so we grew up on a ranch. So my dad wanted us to be ranchers. So he wanted us to take over the ranch and run the horses and do the, you know, mending of the fences and all of that stuff. And you could only take horseshit. Can I say? You can only take that for so long before you're like, ugh. We were like, we wanted something bigger than our small town and where we were.
But what I liked though with them, I mean, my dad liked that we were on a ranch and he wanted us to take over the cattle. But they encouraged us with anything we were passionate about. And I can remember my dad giving us the advice. Literally, we were probably 5 years old or 6 years old, and he said to us, "Don't ever let somebody step in the way of your dreams. If someone tells you you can't do something, find five ways to do it." And that's lived with us through ever since we were kids. And any business we've started, anything we do.
So Dad's responsible for us being overachievers.
Yes, thanks, Dad.
Well, and there's a section in the book called Dream Big.
Oh, yeah.
The whole analysis of...
That's the first step of everything we do with clients. So when we... Which you don't get to see everything involved when we're working with clients because it's only a one-hour show for Property Brothers or buying and selling. But our actual process, which we tried to portray in the book, is we would sit down at the client's kitchen table or in our office. We'd sit down with them and we would go through a list and tell them to dream big. Don't you know, cut anything out in the very beginning. What would be in your perfect home? And, you know, people will say Olympic-sized swimming pool and golden toilet and, you know, name it, which, by the way, does feel better. And so we have all these things. But then you go through the list and you divide out what must-haves, what you can do without, and then you get to this place where, all right, let's see if we can get there. Now we'll look at the finances. And usually when the finances kick in is when you really start to see those wish list items dwindle away a little bit. But we've been great, and there's a lot of examples in the book about how you can stretch the budget to include a lot of the items you didn't think you could get.
Yeah. There's always that moment when a client recognizes just how much this is all going to cost, not just, and I'm referring to the show specifically, when the client says, okay, we have X amount of money, we can get a house for a little bit more, but oh, then these two guys are going to be, you know, it's going to be that much more to redecorate renovate.
That moment on the show when you see the first tier, that is that moment. No, I mean, there's so much that happens behind the scenes, too. Jonathan's very collaborative with all of our designs, anything we do with the clients, so it's not like we're just forcing something on them that they wouldn't like. But 99% of people out there, whether it's a show or not, 99% of homeowners or home buyers out there, they're not realistic with what they can afford. They want this, but they can only afford this. So who's seen Property Brothers? Show of hands. All right, let's do the other way around. Who has not seen, doesn't know who we are?
Yeah.
Get out.
Yeah. I'm not Mike Holmes.
Yeah. So, who did you think was here? Anyway, so on Property Brothers, who loves it when I show them that house that is way out of their budget? And I'm like, oh, see?
No.
We're all a bunch
of
jerks.
That's the worst. I hate that part of the show. So Drew, I swear to God, Drew would have a hairless cat and he would pet it, cackling as he rips the rug out from underneath them and tells him he can't afford it. I think there's a nice way to do it. But it is true that sometimes you have to bring people down from the cloud. Now, granted, you will never be able to renovate a kitchen for the same price that I do on Property Brothers because, one, you live in California, and two, you know, I don't charge for my time as a contractor, so the more work I do, it helps extend the budget. Drew charges triple for his time.
Yeah, I have spot one. Golf lessons.
So, you know, all of our sub-trades are paid, and people pay, but if we get wholesale on materials, then that we get passed along. But the big thing for us, we try and show people creative ways. Prime example would be in a kitchen for, you know, getting a designer look and not paying. Two-tone cabinets doesn't cost any more to do an island a different color, but it gives it that real unique look. So people love all of those tidbits in the book where it's just about stretching the budget without spending an extra cent.
Since we're on the show per se, you guys come in to work with the homeowners. What groundwork has been laid and by whom? What's ready for you guys already?
Basically.
Well, I mean, the one thing, this is one of the biggest questions we get. Usually people are asking on the shows, it can't be the real budgets, can't be the real timelines. It's all real. What we tell you is actually what's real. But people ask all the time on social media, like, Jonathan, how do you do all these renovations all on your own? You're amazing. No, you see our trades and our sub-trades. He's not that good. He's good, just not that good. So we have big teams. Even under me, before I go to a city, we have a team of local real estate agents that are out there scouring for people who could fit the show's format. Somebody who's looking to buy a house, but they're looking possibly for a fixer-upper. And then Jonathan has a team of real estate of contractors that are his construction leads. Basically, we do 10 projects at a time. So 10 renovations at one time. That means that, Jonathan, how many do you have? The 4 or 5 crews usually?
I'll have about 5 crews. Mm-hmm. And the other reason, too, that I do it is, you know, there's the National Building Code, but every jurisdiction has local amendments to the National Code, which I don't know all the local amendments.
Right.
So I need local trades who do know that stuff. And when I leave town, I need to leave the homeowners with a warranty. So I always work with local GCs, general contractors, who will offer that warranty. So everything, we create about 100 jobs locally whenever we come to a new area. So that's a nice thing, too, Exactly. It's a little infusion into the local market.
Yeah.
But it's a massive problem. We've become a well-oiled machine. And, you know, the other thing, too, is we originally, in the very, very beginning, we started with homeowners who had not even started looking, nothing. They hadn't seen anything. And it was taking so long to get people to narrow down what they were looking for, where they'd lose houses to multiple offers. So we opened it up and we said, if people have been searching, most people have their own realtor and they've been searching for a long time. They may even have identified a house that they want, that they like. We'll still allow them on the show. In fact, we like that. We'll show them other houses, and often they'll take the other house. But the one thing that I think is funny is the homeowners always say, like, their realtor will come over and be like, well, I've been working with these folks for a year. Is there any way I could just get a referral fee? And we're not taking people away from their real estate agent. Drew works with their real estate agent who knows them better than we do, and we all work together as a big, happy family.
And people think that I'm licensed in every – because we shoot – and you may not know this, too. A lot of people think we just shoot in Canada. We shoot majority of the shows in the U.S. We've done Austin, Atlanta, New York, and Connecticut. We go back to New York and Connecticut in a week and a half for another 3 months. Where else? We've done LA, Vegas, hopefully here. And we've also shot in Toronto and Vancouver. But a lot of people think I'm licensed in every single jurisdiction, which is not the case. I am licensed, but we work with other real estate agents off camera that are local, because otherwise I would be doing recurrent training year-round all the time.
And I barely see him as it is, so I need to make sure that he's on site.
Yeah. You guys have advice about how to do this all for everyone who's not privileged enough to work with you on your show. And you said in your own case, you worked with a realtor early on who turned out to be just a naysayer. And you talked about how not every realtor / real estate agent is going to be in it for you.
Yeah.
And how do you screen? How do you figure that out?
Well, the thing we're saying is not every – this is with professionals in general. Not every professional is right for every client, whether it is a contractor, a lender, a real estate agent. So you have to do a bit of your due diligence, figure out if they're the right fit. You never want a professional working with you to make you feel dumb for asking certain questions. You should have someone who knows that you have questions, you want to be educated, know the process, and help you through it.
Well, and this is also your money. This is your biggest investment you've ever had. So you better make sure that this person's working their butt off for you. Otherwise, you know, real estate agents get paid very good money. I wish I got paid like that when I first started swapping toilets out and stuff like that.
On the real estate agent side of it, the one thing to keep in mind is a lot of real estate agents, you know, they know a certain area, but just because they're your sister's cousin's dog walker doesn't mean you should work with them. That means nothing. If they know this jurisdiction, but you're buying in this area, no, maybe you shouldn't use them. Maybe you find somebody who knows that local area. Also, some real estate agents, they don't know renovation costs. They don't know what value is after you've done an improvement. They just know basic sales and comparables. For me, a big thing that helped me is that we've been renovating houses for almost 20 years. So when I'm looking at what's been done, I can tell a client if this is a cheap material, this has added X number of dollars to the property, they're asking too much money.
And that's what we always say. That, you know, you have to realize, too, of course, your real estate agent, they can't give you tax advice or accounting advice or any of these sort of things. However, a good agent should be able to tell you, there's something about this that you want to get checked out. Go talk to an attorney or go talk to a contractor. Or, you know, something here looks suspicious. And one of the ones that we saw a lot of when we were starting our business out were the signs of a marijuana grow up. There were a lot of houses in this, and this is a startling but funny fact. So we grew up in Vancouver. At one point, they said that 1 in 5 homes was being used to grow illegal marijuana legally.
And great supplemental income.
Yeah, perfect. There's your retirement.
Oh, wait, no.
So we, you know, so the big problem is, of course, there's a lot of mold problems in those houses because of the humidity. So you would see like large holes cut throughout walls and in basements and illegal wiring, surface mount, things like this. Well, those are immediately signs that you need to get a mold inspection done. And so the average homeowner would never know that. And so these are the things that real estate professionals should be working for you. And if you're a first-time buyer, too, you don't want some fast-talking, big-city, commercial realtor-type person who's going to be, you know, speeding things along too fast that you don't get to ask the questions you want. So it's very important that somebody understands what you need out of your home if your home is going to make your life easier.
Any professional, you interview them. You're the boss. So you see if they're going to work for you and what you need.
I like to think that I have this tool belt. In my tool belt, I have a real estate agent in my tool. He likes to think that I'm in his tool belt, but no, I have him in my tool belt.
No, no, so that's where you're wrong. Yeah. I don't carry a tool belt. I just have a tool with me at all times.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to borrow your gavel for one moment, please.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so. Can you tell that we've known each other for 37 years?
Well, about that, I kind of wonder about the ability to keep working together and sharing the same. And I'm granted you're not home at the same times, but you guys are together.
Were you
all
say sharing the same girlfriend? No, no, no. She's fine.
You disappoint so many people here if both of you were spoken for. But does it ever get, I don't want to say tiresome or horrible, but doesn't it get a little grindy sometimes?
Yeah, well,
never.
I mean, mainly, yeah, help. Our family's really close. I mean, even our older brother as well and our parents, and we're very, very close. We get along. We call it our no BS policy. If something's bugging us, we just get it out, we deal with it, and we move on. We've always been that way. And, of course, we're brothers, we're siblings, so we don't always agree. We just don't pull hair and punch as much as we did when we were little.
And I carry big power tools, so yeah, usually he won't argue with me when I'm doing that. But it's the only thing that I think grinds his gears is I laugh. So we were doing an interview with Steve Harvey on his show last year, and just a regular interview like this, talking about everything. And then all of a sudden, Steve's like, okay, stop. This is not why you're here. And I was like, okay. And he's like, Drew and his girlfriend are tired of you third wheeling all the time. And he starts showing pictures. These guys have been taking secret pictures when we're at the movies of me by myself, like third wheeling on them, and me at the ice cream shop and at restaurants. And then he opens up this wall, and there's three eligible bachelorettes sitting there. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Yep.
So I think at some point, so actually, Drew and Linda are actually looking for a place in California right now that they'd like to move out this way.
Well,
like
who saw the renovation we did last year? We shot a show, Property Brothers at Home, the reno on our house. Who likes Jonathan's slide? It's pretty awesome, I will admit. But we actually live together. We live in bunk beds, if you didn't realize. But we sold our own properties because we spend 10.5 months on the road, unless we're filming at home. This year, I was at home for 3 months, but typically I only get home 2 or 3 weeks a year. And we sold our own place. We got what we call the Scott Family Compound. And this is, we built a guest house next door for our parents when they come down from Canada when they have 2 feet of snow and they don't want to be cold. And so we have our whole family in this one area. And that's when I feel most at home, over the holiday when we all get together. We just love spending time together. We laugh all day long. And our parents are just as fun as we are. I'm surprised we even get any work done on the show. We just spend all day laughing with our crew.
Our crew's and everything, they're like family. I laugh because my parents, so we've done, so I've lived in Vegas now for 8 years, and we've done Christmas at my place in Vegas ever since I moved there. Drew's been there about 6 years now, and I laugh because my parents will say to us, like, oh, do you want to do Christmas up here in Canada this year? And I'm like,
no.
Oh, my
no.
God, no.
So
two feet of snow, forget it.
It's beautiful. I think this year, this coming year, we'll go for like 2 days just to be like, hello, snow,
we always,
and then we'll go
summer,
home.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. Has anyone been to Canada? Have you visited Canada? Absolutely gorgeous.
Wow.
Absolutely love it. Love the people. Love everything. But I hate the cold. I hate the cold.
So. I should have been born in the Caribbean. I love heat. Yeah. That Vegas midsummer heat, give it to me. Go to the valley. My friends in L.A. said, stay away from the valley. No, I'll take it. I don't mind 110.
I did notice that when you were being interviewed at Google and the host, I said, oh, well, you know, one of you is left-handed, the other one is right-handed, and you came out with, I can go either way. Chortle, chortle.
It is true, yes. Yeah. It's pretty funny. So we're mirror image twins. I don't know how, do we have any twins in the crowd here? A few twins. Oh, there are
a lot of twins in the crowd.
Represent. And so we're mirror image twins with almost everything. You know, I've got cowlicks that go this way, and he's got them that go this way. I'm right-handed, he's left-handed. But I do actually operate most, like when you're doing construction stuff, sometimes I can't get in.
Actually, it's really weird. Left-handed. So he'll make fun of me, though. He'll come in and he'll purposely, because I'm left-handed, he'll purposely give me something that I have to do on camera, but he'll give me the right-handed side to do it. And I can't swing a sledgehammer very well. This, like, I like to crack it like this way.
Well, I hate to tell you, sledgehammers are not left-handed and right-handed.
I need the left-handed ones. You guys get out there and you try it. Try doing this when you like doing that. Anyway, but he purposely tries to trip me up. I'll also have you know, which you may not know, over, the last 6 years, Jonathan has been trying to make you all, he's been brainwashing all of you to think that he's the only handy brother. We used to both do it. When we started right out of high school, we both did all the hands-on work. I was even better than him at tiling and siding and different projects. Then I broke a nail in 96, and I didn't want to do it anymore.
But,
but yeah,
it is actually kind of nice on Brother versus Brother. Drew, so I don't do any of the design in his house. I don't do any of the construction. He's in there doing it. He's got his own, he picked up a tool belt, a big boy tool belt and everything. And so he does all the work. So I always laugh because Drew, that's why we're such a great pair together, because he knows exactly what I can do. He knows what looks good in design. I know on the real estate side, you know, well, I think this is going to be a good investment. But he's got all the stats. He's got access to the system with the stats. But we're great that way because we can work off. It's almost like in what we do physically for jobs, how best friends can finish each other's sentences. Well, he can come up with an idea and I can make it happen and vice versa. So that's why I think we have a great dynamic.
Let's test
together.
This. I think that Drew is
great at making sandwiches.
I am, actually.
Yes, that's very impressive.
Yeah. Apparently we share a brain, too.
This is a record. This is the most cards I've ever been handed at Commonwealth Club. So let's
get through them all.
Let's dive into these.
And by the way, there's no such thing as a stupid question. But if you ask a stupid question, we'll make fun of you. So...
Have you ever taken on a project or a client that you regret? And if it is the project from hell, how hard is it to get out of the contract?
Yes, we have. So fortunately, knock on wood, that needs to be refinished. There's only one client on the show that we started filming with, and we worked actually several days, found the house for them. They ended up buying the house, and we had to cancel that episode because
they didn't use me because I said, this is not the property.
No.
I don't want to represent you for this property. And he went and got it on his own anyway.
Yeah, so we canceled because he had started saying that. So basically what happens when we find a house, we do a design on the house and what we could do. And when I was working the numbers, doing all this, the house that he was looking at had sunk at the back by about a foot
literally
and a half.
The house sunk, the
so
entire
if
house.
You think like this, it had sunk at the back. He did not want to do it to code, so he just wanted to level the floor out so that the back of the house was going to be 6 foot in height. It's illegal, you can't do that, but that's how he had a lot of things that he wanted to cut code and not do this and the other thing. And I don't want to work with somebody who's wanting to do things illegally, so we canceled the episode. But there are some people who are so fixated at either the initial cost of what they're trying to do, or they're so fixated on one element that they're ignoring the nuclear power plant right behind the house that it's not worth working with them. So, I canceled that episode.
I think the important thing to realize, if you're getting into a renovation project, if you're trying to maximize your dollar, you know, a renovation will go a long way because you pay a lot more for a brand new home or you pay a lot more for a house that's already renovated. Obviously, the seller wants to make some money on the work they did. So if you're getting into a place with a renovation, before you actually get into the deal with your contractor, before you even get into the deal with buying the home, first of all, bring a contractor in to quote the project. Before a contractor would actually start the work on everything, get it all in writing. See what it's actually going to cost before you jump in.
We have no more time for questions, so thank you very much.
How come your renovations on Property Brothers usually don't include bathrooms? Do you find that clients later wish they'd renovated the entire house?
That's not true.
You got to watch more episodes.
Yeah, you need to watch more episodes. The thing is, we focus on the rooms that are the most important to that homeowner. And if you notice on Property Brothers, we're not renovating the entire house for the $80,000 budget, whatever it is. We're doing 3 to 4 rooms. So if that family, the most important rooms for them are the master bedroom, the kids' game area, kitchen, and an office, those are the 4 that we do. But we're open to everything. I mean, one thing we have not done that I really want to do, we've both been wanting to do, are accessible homes. We've never had a client that's applied to be on the show for accessible homes, because I'd love to educate people on what you can do to improve a space for
our company has done accessible homes before Property Brothers existed, but never for the shows. But yeah, so it's it just depends. And keep in mind too, we actually usually renovate the whole house inside and out, but it's a separate timeline, separate budget for everything else. We only have time to film 3 or 4 rooms for the show.
So. I like how they're still collecting questions, and we already have 5,000.
Yes. We're going to be here until Tuesday.
That's right. So. Fine. No problem.
Yeah, hey, I'm good. You guys want to hang out? We'll just have
the other cities on the book tour may have a problem with that. But yeah.
What's the dynamic working with couples? What are you running to there?
Listen to your wife and make life heavenly. It's very, very funny. So at the beginning of the show, we don't tell people to act a certain way. We tell the homeowners that are on the show, just be yourselves. And a lot of times they'll walk in and we'll do our first scene with them and they'll be like, well, DeRue and DeJonathan, I really don't like what you have done. Like it's so staged. I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, well, we're trying to be what you want us to be on the show. I'm like, no, be yourselves. Because any of the times you want to slap the person on the screen when you're watching.
I've never wanted to hit
a
homeowner.
Never wanted to do that. That's them being themselves. And they never
once.
Agree. You, maybe we've had a small handful. Between the buying and selling property brothers, we've almost hit 200 episodes. We've maybe had a small handful of homeowners that agree. They all want completely different things. We're like, you guys realize you need to live in this house together. Right?
By the way, it's 21st century, so why is it always like happy wife, happy life? It's got to be like happy dude, happy mood or something. I don't know. Come on, ladies. Yeah. Let's balance it out a little here.
But yeah, part of it is how much you guys know the business. You had a couple that she wanted a mirror and he wanted a TV, and you guys found a TV that turned into a mirror when you turned it off.
You've really watched some episodes. I like it. That's the good thing for me is it's all about compromise. The problem is homeowners don't actually know what they like. That's the problem because they've only been exposed to the stuff that they've been exposed to. But as a designer, I make an effort of getting out, seeing all the new materials, seeing the new technology, seeing everything that's available. So I may have a solution for something that they don't even know exists. One of the biggest challenges is when somebody is sort of being unfair in the sense that, so a prime example, I had a homeowner who in the initial design, I do an inspiration board of everything that I want to put into the design, and they sign off on all of that, and I do the 3D renderings and everything. That's great. Well, the initial flooring that I had put in that design, there wasn't enough of it in stock. In fact, it had been discontinued, and it was not available anywhere. And the homeowner on the show, and I think we played it in the show, she was like, I don't care. That's what I want. That's it. That's the flooring I want. No other flooring. I'm like, if I had put a walnut board, she would have been okay with the walnut board. But because that's what it was, and she said yes, that's all she wanted. I had to scour the continent to try and find it. And I had to bring in pieces from all over. I ended up getting some from New Jersey and
some
from
Alaska. Are you trying to say that homeowners can be unrealistic?
Yes.
Come on.
Yes. So just so you know, if you were ever on the show and you see these homeowners like, oh, that couple is such a pain in the butt, you would be just like them.
No. Yeah.
Everyone always gets a little emotional. The homeowners on Property Brothers, they're paying for the majority of the renovation. It's their money on the line. Production gives them about 10 grand cash and about another 20 or 30 grand in free stuff. And then we get deals on stuff, but predominantly they're paying for it, so they get wacky.
We tell the homeowners, though, when they come on the show, like, we just want you to be yourselves. And they're like, but I don't want to look like that jerk that was in this episode that was a total pain in your butt. And we're like, don't worry about it.
If you're a jerk, you will look like a jerk.
That's all there is to it.
Do you ever get blowback on that? Do you ever have someone say to you, oh, my God, you misrepresented me or you made me look so bad?
So there's
we have contracts. Good luck. Oh, sorry.
Well, we have – there's only – so, you know, it's not like, you know, everything's all happening. Right. There's one – only in the entire history of, like Drew said, almost 200 episodes, there's only one homeowner that I lost it on and I yelled at them, which did not make it into the episode. But this person was really out of line all the time. And no matter what we would do – so we're doing the reveal. The husband was crying. He was so happy, everything. She'd be like, well, I liked my old counters. And I thought, well, I didn't think there was anything wrong with my cabinets. And she's going on. But she was just, I don't know. Just so you know how crazy this person is, when we were working, we were told if her cat walks into the room we're working in, we were no longer allowed to work in that room until the cat decided to leave.
No one is allowed to touch or move the cat. I'm like, no, I will not touch the cat. Yeah, it was nuts. We did a scene. Oh my gosh! There's so much. We gotta start putting blooper reels.
The more
on
detail
TV.
You give, the more they'll know who it is.
We were doing a scene where we were shooting. We were at a store. I was helping John with some of the design shopping and whatnot. And I said something that wasn't even that funny. I'm like, oh, you know, this shirt, whatever this pattern was, looks like Jonathan's shirt. Ha ha! Just something that was just a little goofy, nothing big. She lost it and started rolling around on the ground, screaming and laughing.
A grown-ass adult rolling on the floor of a store.
And her husband and I are literally just sitting there.
Drew is not that funny.
No.
So,
it was,
sorry.
We have fun.
So it's not like everything always goes smoothly. There's sometimes people, but the fortunate thing is I've never had a client at the end of the day who did not like the design. Maybe there's an individual art piece or chair or something. Easy to swap, but I'm very collaborative through the process to make sure that they're going to like it in the end. But some people... just batshit crazy.
And the thing we will say too, with all the episodes that we do, I mean, we understand that's we've been doing this well before the shows as well. We know that buying, renovating, selling, you guys know if you've done it, it's one of the most stressful things in your life, especially if you're trying to live through a renovation. That's really tough on a family, especially if you have kids. And so we are here to sort of take a lot of that stress off your plate and try and help you through the process. So just because people balk at us a little bit doesn't bug me.
No.
I heard a stat that out of everyone who does renovation, 2/3 of those couples will be divorced within 10 years.
Honestly, the stats the stats are crazy. Our new show, DIY Divorce, really lays that out.
That is not a real show.
That's not a real show. Yeah. But honestly, that is why we tell clients, do not live in a renovation zone. Even if you know what you're doing, it's dirty, it's dusty every morning, it's going to hurt your throat, allergies worked up. It's not fun.
No.
A number of people have asked the same question that's talking about, you know, the beginnings of your career. And I'm going to hone that a little bit because Drew got an audition for a show that never got off the ground. You refer to it in your book, and it was called Realtor Idol. But you like don't see what is it about?
Drew calls me up. It's just funny. We were living in different cities because he expanded our business out to Vancouver. I was doing the construction and the real estate side of things in Calgary. And Drew calls me up. He's like, hey, I got this call to host this show. It's amazing. It's a show.
I was competing. I wasn't hosting.
Well, he was in the show, and he's like, oh, it's called Realtor Idol. And I was like, that's the dumbest thing I have ever heard.
It was a very supportive brother show. So I'm glad that didn't happen. And then that's that same company found out.
It didn't involve singing, though, did it?
No, it wasn't. We always make out like it was singing. It was actually a competition of realtors, but it was a really dumb idea. And anyway, they found out I had a brother who's a contractor.
And who's awesome.
Yeah. And so they're like, hey, let's do a show called Dream Home. Actually, Dream Home, just like our book, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Full circle.
The show is called My Dream Home originally, and then we eventually changed it to Property Brothers before it aired.
I didn't plan on saying this right now, but I just have to say for all of you who think, oh, these guys are being so cool on stage, they're just like this in the back room. That's not always true. You guys are this down to earth and this accessible. I just wanted to point that out.
My mom would kick my butt if I wasn't.
Well, it's a pleasure, I have to tell you. We have probably one of our youngest audience members who asks about, this is something you touch on in the book, the things that buyers look for that make it a good house. And in the book, you talk about determining these are my absolutes, and these I can live without or not, these I absolutely don't want. But is there a commonality between, you know, what makes a good house?
Yeah, one of the things that I notice people tend to sacrifice a little bit is planning ahead. So you have to think ahead. Don't think about your situation right now. Plan ahead. So whether it's on the financial side when you're buying a house, you know, if you're about to have a baby in six, I don't know how long it takes to have a baby, you know, who knows, 6 months.
Jonathan never hangs around long enough to find out.
I will pull out the gavel again, sir.
Anyway, so in like 9 months, you're going to have a baby. You know, your life is going to get a lot more expensive. So don't max yourself out now buying a house to the point where you can't afford to pay the mortgage in a year. But on the flip side, so many couples I know, you know, the interesting thing is it used to be that someone would buy a house and they would live in it for generations. So they would pass it to the kids and whatnot. Now they say the stat is the average family moves every 3 to 5 years. That's crazy.
Yeah.
The problem is a lot of people get a home and then they start having children and all of a sudden they have to move again and maybe they have to move again. Try and find something that will work, even if you have to renovate another area, renovate another room to make it work, but try and get something now so you can build the equity within this home instead of paying real estate fees and paying sales taxes.
But also we find too, people, because a lot of families are used to living in houses longer, they used to do a lot of renovations that were very specific to their needs, not thinking about resale value. I'm never going to sell. I don't need to think about that. But nowadays, because so many people do move more frequently, we really try to stress with homeowners out there, anything you do to improve your house, really think of what buyers want in your area. Think of what resale value will be.
If you're not planning on selling right
now. Yeah, even if you're not planning on selling right away. If you have a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom home, don't tear the tub out to put in a big, beautiful spa-like shower, because as soon as you go to sell, all those families that would have looked at the home, now they're not going to look at it because there's no tub.
We had one client on property, buying and selling, who wanted to do that. They wanted to tear out the tub and put a big, brand-new shower. The problem is families need a tub. That's what they need. They need a tub. And this homeowner, she had 2 little kids, and she's like, no, it's fine. I'll teach him to shower.
I was like, I'm picturing a 2-year-old in there.
Well, hey, you know. It's time to breastfeed, Ma. Let's do it. Like, no. That makes no sense.
A New Yorker 2-year-old?
Yeah, I'm a Jersey kid. Come on. So you have to think about
the whole thing is there's no secret recipe to real estate. People think there's some magical secret recipe that makes things work. It isn't. It's the most basic of economics. And originally, when I went to university, I went to university for business. And the but the thing is, it's supply and demand. The more people that want your product, the better a price you're going to get for it. And so if you talk to a real estate professional, no matter what you're doing in your renovation, and make sure that the majority of buyers will like that feature, great. One of the prime examples in the book that we say is don't put a pool in. Some people are like, ooh, I'll put a pool in so my house stands out from the others when I go to sell. So,
excuse me.
Oh, yes. I was like, what, did I say something wrong?
I wasn't sure how long my cord was. Yeah. This is actually a security measure. They don't want me to come out to the audience.
So this, it's really weird. This is actually, Drew and I are still adjoined.
Yeah.
So we had it. Anyway.
This is getting creepy.
Yeah, it got really creepy. So anyway, I don't even remember what I was talking about. But oh, yeah, pool.
Back to
the pool thing is, you know, a pool. If I was to put a pool in today and had to sell the house tomorrow, I would maybe get 50% of the value of what I put into it to put the pool. So a pool is not a good investment to put in unless it's something you're going to use as a family for a long period of time. Don't put something like that in to try and sell the home.
Just one last note on what your original question is, because we tend to go off on tangents. so if someone's doing something for an improvement, I mean, it's not a bad thing to customize certain things for what you want. Look at the areas that are most important to you and your family. Yes, a lot of people tend to like renovating kitchens because that's the heart of most homes. That's fine. Or a lot nowadays, a lot of people are looking for a bonus room that could be a theater room or a game room so that the kids and the whole family can stay at home, spend time together instead of spending money going out. Mm-hmm. So there are commonalities in those sort of aspects. But look at what's important to you. Just make sure whatever you do for hard renovation to change something in the home isn't so obscure that it's going to cost you money to fix it back to what it used to be when you go to sell.
There's kind of a really thin line, isn't there, between keeping that resale value in your mind and making sure that what you're doing is accessible to people who might see it and really making the home your own.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate it when I walk into a house and you can't, it's cold, it doesn't have any personality, you can't tell who lives in the house because it's so barren. A house should be a reflection of your personality, but the whole purpose of our book is your home should make your life easier. So if you have four kids and you spend half your life doing laundry, maybe it's worth spending a little bit more money on the laundry facilities in the house, because you can get washers and dryers today that do an extra large capacity load in 15-minute wash, 15-minute dry. Done. So that would save a lot of time. So every family has a different dynamic. Every family needs to use their home differently. So use materials, use appliances, use technology that is going to help with your lifestyle.
Technology will help. How many of you still leave your home and then like 10 minutes later your wife is like, hey, I forgot the stove's still on, and you have to go back? Anybody still?
That's never happened
there,
before.
A couple of hands, yeah. Now you have stoves that you can just go on your phone and shut it off with an app. So there's a lot that can make your lives easier.
No, the better one is if you go to the grocery store and you're like, oh, I can't remember, do I have milk? There's a fridge. Samsung just put out a fridge that will take a snapshot of all the shelves in your fridge right now and send it to your phone so you can see exactly what's on every shelf.
I'm not kidding. I'm just going to point out right now what I heard in the audience with a bunch of higher pitched voices. Oh, that sounds amazing. I didn't hear one, oh, that's cool. Yeah. Dudes don't care.
Yeah, you just don't care.
Yeah, they want the big screen TV.
It says best before. It doesn't say I can't eat it.
There are TVs. All right, for you dudes out there, there are TVs you can get nowadays. You don't plug them in or anything like that. You take it off one wall. You walk it outside. You slap it somewhere else you want. You have TVs that you can roll up. Nowadays, yeah. It's ridiculous.
The technology, and of course, technology initially is all very, very, very expensive when the new technology comes out.
Right.
But that's the one I love. It's the sort of the home hub system where it's all wireless. TVs, they take off, yeah, and you... They're lightweight. You can walk them around. And technology is really, really going to advance quite a ways in the next 10 years. And I think in a good way. You know, sometimes they invent technology that you're like, why would I never, ever need that? But like the toilet that sprays at you. Never mind. Anyway, or makes noises and stuff. You press a button. But and then there's other stuff, too, that I'm like, okay, that actually has a purpose. Just so you know as well, when it comes to technology, be wary about whenever when you're working out the cost of something, the lifetime warranty on some of these things. Because as you know very well here, in 5 years, all of the technology we use today is going to be completely different tomorrow. It's going to be obsolete. So, you know, don't go banking on amortizing your technology costs over the next 20 years. I went into one house where the person's like, oh, yeah, the listing said it's totally teched out and everything's great. They had wall-mounted tube TVs. They were tube TVs on these giant arms in the corner of every room.
Yeah. Just so you know, I know design, a lot of elements come back into style after so many years. Don't hold on to your VHS recorders. Those VCRs aren't coming back.
Maybe Beta. Who knows?
This another question that talks us right into what you cover in the book. Should you renovate to sell a house?
Yeah, so a lot of people ask us this. I get clients all the time that say to me, I want to sell this house for top dollar. I want it to sell fast. I want to get as much as anyone would get in this neighborhood. I'm like, great. So we're going to show you some things that we need to do to improve the home, spend a little bit of money to get that big bang for your buck. They're like, no. I don't want to spend money. Just get me that top dollar. Well, come on. Use your head. You're not going to get top dollar unless it looks that way. So there's a certain amount you want to spend, but we sort of try to talk clients out of a full-blown renovation just before selling. It's more like what we do on buying and selling. Who's seen Buying and Selling, our show? Good, a lot of hands. Not one noise, though. That was interesting. That was really weird. But yeah, it's a mild makeover and staging to help you make the place look the best it can look without overspending. So you need to know what buyers are looking for in an area. Need to know, and you need to be honest with yourself. That's why working with a third-party professional that's not emotionally attached is good. We will tell you the areas that look very dated. And doing a mild makeover on the whole place is much better for you than just doing a spot reno on, like, the kitchen. Because if you have a nice kitchen and the rest is ugly, buyer's going to see that.
And it's kind of, we call it the ick factor, getting rid of the ick factor. The more times a buyer goes, even if they're little tiny things, they add up to them just washing their hands of the house and walking away. So even just cleaning a house. By the way, on Property Brothers, when we're showing those dilapidated houses, we don't stage them to look like that. Somebody has actually listed it on the market looking that awful. They would get an extra 10 grand if they just cleaned the damn thing. So, yeah. But anyway, so yeah, it's important not to, there's a fine balance not to spend too much money when you're just going to sell, but doing enough that really it's going to maximize the dollar.
I feel sorry for whoever gave us this question. Dealing with a disagreement between the designer and the contractor.
Oh, well,
I do have split personality disorder.
Conflict. So, so aside from Jonathan, and this is something important for you guys to realize too, most designers are not contractors and vice versa. Like Jonathan, he's an anomaly for more reasons than one. So if you are looking to do a renovation, there are a lot of people out there that just go and get a contractor, and then they're like, why doesn't it look the way it looks on Property Brothers or in a magazine? Well, because contractors aren't designers. If you find a designer first, that's usually a better idea because a lot of them have relationships with contractors that can do the
If your contractor says, yeah, we're going to put in some honey oak cabinets, it's going to look great, get a different designer, get somebody else.
Yeah. So. And if they're having a dispute, well, I mean, that's a tough thing because at the end of the day, you make the decision. You're the client. And so I would just say, I would look at what the dispute is. If it's over a cost point, then maybe look at what the cost is and find a solution. If it's something over design, well, the contractor's not the designer.
Well, so. It's always a balance. It's usually budget that determines everything. But who likes the kitchens I do on Property Brothers? Judging by the silence, for those of you listening on radio, a lot of hands went up. The rest of you can go to hell. But the funny thing is, so on Property Buzz, we're working with people who do not have a budget. They have barely enough money. That's why they thought they would never be able to get into their dream home. But we do prefab cabinets for 80% of the kitchens. And the prefab quality today is way better than it ever was in the past. If you have the budget for custom cabinets, hey, great, you can't beat that. But most people don't. So by using our big box stores, getting those cabinets, I can finish them off with crown molding and trim and make them look custom. But then we've saved enough money that I can put in stone counters and upgraded appliances and all the things that really are what the homeowners want. Because at the end of the day, most people don't realize you can get all of the cabinets and doors and everything for the average size kitchen for $5,000 to $7,000. Mm-hmm. That's all it costs. Have you ever heard of a $5,000 to $7,000 kitchen quote here in California?
Mm.
No. So the thing is, it's the labor that they charge you $1 million for. So
and the extra materials aside from the cabinets, your countertops, your hardware, everything else that goes with it. So, but by the way, I want to point out. Who here watches the show and then sees like these 26-year-old newlywed couples buying $1 million fixer-upper and you're like,
yeah.
Who are you?
Who are these jerks?
That's Canada. Yeah. Yeah. You think it's expensive here? Go to Vancouver or Toronto. It's very, very expensive.
Well, that brings up something I wanted to ask you because you mentioned in the book that you'd seen the 2007 crash in home values. And having seen that, I'm wondering if your idea of whether the home should be an investment per se has changed.
Oh, no, absolutely. The home, I mean, if you don't feel, first of all, that you have to invest in real estate, some people were so desperate to be invested in real estate that they lost their shirt when the economy collapsed. If you are smart about it and you approach it the right way, real estate is a phenomenal investment and it's the way to go. And if you look at the markets over the long run, by the way, I used to be a financial advisor as well. So
he is an overachiever.
Yes. So when you look at the markets over the long run, they always went up and everybody in the long term makes money on real estate. The people people who really lost their shirt were the people who had overinvested, who had overborrowed. And so, yeah, approach it smart. When we were looking at real estate, so when the crash happened in 2007, we were fortunate enough that we saw the writing on the wall. We had unloaded most of our properties, but we looked at it in the fact that if something did happen to the market, what's going to happen to the property we have that when nobody else can qualify for mortgages, they're going to need to rent. So we looked at, instead of us bailing on all of these properties, we'll turn them into rentals and we'll rent them at for affordable prices and we'll keep them until the prices come back up. In Las Vegas, I mean, all of the rental properties that we had there, we had them rented solid for years and years and years beyond the fact there, and they're beautiful houses that we fixed up just to be affordable rentals. So yeah, you change your strategy and you change what you're looking to do if you're smart in real estate, and especially when it comes to, people always think the only way, sorry to do a 2-hour answer.
As I say, I'm trying, if you see me going like this, trying to get a word in, but Jonathan doesn't breathe his between his lines.
I can talk and breathe at the same time. I play the bagpipes. So we, the big thing we're saying is whenever we say, you know, someone says, I want to do well in real estate, I want to make extra money, they think the only way to improve the value of your investment is to renovate it. And that's only half of it. If you're also smart on the financial side, paying down your mortgage faster, doing biweekly payments, adding a little bit extra, you know, per month, or doing your year-end top-up on the mortgage, you could pay your mortgage off in half the time and own your house outright in 13 years. So you do that and renovate your home. All of a sudden, you have this incredible investment. Because I hate to tell you, for the younger generation, the millennials, I don't think there's going to be government pensions around by the time you're ready to retire. So you got to start making those plans on your own.
So the big thing we really stress to clients, don't over-leverage. A lot of people still do. If you're putting your down payment or you're putting a major reno on your credit card, slap. And you may laugh at that, but you would not believe how many clients come along. They're like, no, I really want to get into a property now because I'm actually at the end of my contract for my work. So I want to qualify now, get in there. I'll just put it on my credit card. I'll figure it out down the road.
I guarantee you, if we put it out, we won't call you out on it, but if we put it out right now, I guarantee you one hand would go up that somebody put a down payment or a major renovation on a credit card. So don't ever be that desperate to get in that you're actually, there's no way you can make the numbers work if you do it that way.
And one last thing to mention, which Jonathan sort of touched on, who has a mortgage here? Who here is a homeowner? Okay. And out of all of you, keep your hands up if you pay monthly payments. Yeah, so usually it's the majority. I beg you to please go and talk to your lender. It costs you nothing to switch to weekly or biweekly payments. You know, you actually end up paying a little bit more at the end of every year, but you don't even notice it. And people say, I can't afford to do weekly or biweekly. It's pretty much the same thing as monthly. You just have different installments. And it's going to save you. And if you think of the term of your mortgage, 20, 25 years, you're going to save probably about $40,000 to $80,000 in interest. If you actually start doing a bit of increased payments or lump sum payments as well, you could be saving $140,000 to $200,000 in interest payments.
Yeah, it's and people always said to me too. Actually, the analogy I like to give when I was doing the financial advising, I would say to people, say for easy figuring, you're making $60,000 a year, and you go out to the movies, you go out with friends, you go to restaurants, and at the end of the year, you have no money left. But then you get a raise. All of a sudden, you're now making $65,000 a year. You go to the same movies, you go out with the same friends to the same restaurants, and at the end of the year, is there $5,000 left? No, because we always naturally spend the money that's sitting around. So instead, have that money come right off and go into your biggest investment, which is your home. If you do biweekly payments, do an extra $50 a month on that, or biweekly. Before you know, I mean, $50 is like one coffee at Starbucks these days, like whatever it is. But instead of, you know, satisfying the
did
need.
You hear those quick claps?
Yeah.
Oh, that's someone who just had a Starbucks
decaf.
Coffee.
Go to decaf.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, instead of spending it on that, you know, short term, you know, luxury, spend it on your retirement. Spend it on your life.
Pay off your house 10 years earlier.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've heard that called paying yourself first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you pay, and actually, so my parents taught us that in the very beginning, because when we were kids, we were actually only given an allowance, which this sounds ridiculous. We're only given an allowance until we were 8 years old. Then we were not given an allowance after that. We had our own little businesses and things going on, and we would wash a car, do something, whatever, for my dad. We grew up on a ranch, so they were strict. But my dad always said, it's up to you. If you want to get this nice toy or this nice thing that you're doing, you have to save up to do that. Where all the kids would spend their $5 here on candy or their $5 here on this and that, we were the nerds that would save up until we had $50 to get the thing that we really wanted.
I'll point out what the thing, when we're 10 years old, we would save up to get. We have a medieval armor and sword collection. And so we were saving up to get these swords from Scotland. Scotland that were real swords, like you know, Braveheart. Ah, freedom! So we have one of those. We have
so that's
two of those
what we encourage kids. Yeah. Buy weapons with their money.
Those were our toys. Yeah. Anyway, long answers.
We have someone who's asking about staging, which I don't know whether this is true throughout the country, but in California, it's almost requisite that you pay a stager, you know, to get the house sold. And the question here is, because it costs money, what do you suggest to be a budget to allocate, and what should people not skip out on?
So it's a tricky thing, because obviously everyone's budget is different, and every state that you're in, it can be a little bit different. But I think it should be a prerequisite for any house listed that they work with a stager, in my opinion, just because I want these houses to look better. There's some of these houses I look at, it's great for me because it looks terrible. I can get it at rock bottom dollar, but these sellers want to make more money. excuse me. If you're selling your home and you don't have a big budget, just a deep clean of your place is one thing. Even if you just brought in a stager or a designer to consult just for an hour or two to give you a few ideas, that could be a benefit to you guys as well, using some of your own furniture pieces. And then if you can up it even a little bit, just a couple of $1,000 to get a few key pieces in some of your main living areas or in some of the bedrooms, that can go a long way.
One key piece of advice for staging, though, is it isn't cheap when you have mm-hmm. these staging companies that will come in and dress your whole house. They know what they're doing, but the problem is that can eat up your margins very fast in what you're going to have for equity in the property when you go to sell. So you need to make sure that you know what your real estate agent's doing, and you know that you're not listing at a price where it's going to sit on the market for a long period of time. It is, people always feel like, oh, if I just test it at this price, there will be that one idiot that comes along who doesn't know anything and will pay it. It's not, because the other thing too is, as you leave the hot market in the spring entering into the summer, it just, you'll chase the market down, and then in the winter you'll sell at a lower price than you would have in the spring. So yeah. Make sure everyone's working together, and do things yourself, like rearranging furniture, getting rid of bulky pieces. Buying and selling, actually, if you want to save yourself money, watch Buying and Selling, because that whole show is about how to sell your house. Mm-hmm. That's the whole purpose of the show.
You kind of have to let go of the ownership of the house when you have someone stage it. When we had my home staged, I saw they painted the bedroom beige, and I burst into tears for the next half hour. You have to let go. It's not yours anymore. Yeah. That's hard for people.
That's what Drew tells people on Buying and Selling as well, is I don't care what you like. It's what the buyers are going to like. And it's very hard for some people to understand that. When you're
one thing I'll mention too, by the way, like what you're saying on beige, a lot of people think go neutral, just neutral, that's it. And people think taupe or beige. But the problem is that can be very boring nowadays. Gray is the new beige. Gray is the new brown with a home. And what we do say, though, is it's not a bad thing to go neutral with your color on your walls and whatnot, or some of the big expensive pieces, like a stone countertop, going a little bit more neutral with what you have for veining or color in the stone, but you want to use your decor pieces, your artwork, your throws and pillows. That's where you can add a bit more interest with colors and patterns to make it look like a design space.
You're painting the picture and creating an environment for the buyer, and no buyer has ever said, oh, I dream of my perfect home being bland and beige. You know, nobody's ever said that. And so, I mean, even if you're lightening it up, you're freshening up, you're going gray, there's 50 shades of gray that you can choose from. And
we're not adding those kind of rooms. Don't add that kind of room.
Simmer
not
down
good resale
people.
Value. Very niche market.
Right. We're getting the giggles in here.
Angie,
yes,
you're turning very red.
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. We have a couple aspiring young people in the audience who want to follow in your footsteps. One in particular is going to study construction, architecture, or engineering. Do you have any wisdom to pass along?
Well, if you want to really be the smart person, be the real estate agent and then make your brother do all of that dirty work. My advice.
I think the big thing for me is I think education is very important. Education is key. So getting a good foundation is something that's very important. But the other thing is to just get out and actually start doing it. So if you have to work underneath somebody else, if you're a designer, work under another designer or an architectural firm, work with somebody so you can soak up their knowledge. You'll get a lot of people who want you to take on jobs for free, and like friends and family, oh, do this for free. But you know what? In the beginning, it's nice to actually get your feet wet and do it a little bit. But so many people I find that they'll go to school and they'll go to school and they'll go to school and they're afraid to actually get out there and start learning.
There's nothing,
design. Yeah, you have
nothing
to.
Like hands-on. Even as a real estate agent, nothing like getting hands-on with clients and out there. And it's hard to get some clients on your own in the beginning. So joining a team that you can actually be doing open houses, you can be doing some of the like tagging along for some of the showings and whatnot, seeing how a negotiation works.
See, she's running out there to get hands-on right now.
She's got the book. It's okay. Yeah. So take us through your day when you're filming. You're up at 7 and done at 10, or you're working by 7 and done by 10, but you also handle all your own social media. You know, you're running your own Twitter accounts. What is your day like?
Well,
Give me your day.
I'm going to point out one thing. For our social media, so
I thought you were going to say, he's up in home and in bed by 10 a.m. Yes,
yes,
you're right.
Yes. I'm at the spa for 4 hours. Really tough. Very tough. No. We both, a lot of people think Jonathan's the only one doing the long hours. We run multiple companies. We have a lot of we have to do on the production. We produce shows that we're not in as well. So when I'm not on the construction site, which is very often, I'm not, I'm actually in the office running some other stuff. But on the social media side, we have actually it's well over it now. We're probably getting close to 1 million questions or comments from fans a week each on all of our platforms. We have a ton of engagement because we post a lot. We have a lot of engaging, fun stuff. So we actually have a social media team in-house. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they sort of filter everything so we can try and answer as much as we can. So if you have a great question or you post a question, a picture of your space, and you're asking for advice, or you guys that are here as well that are going to snap pictures with us and post online, they actually filter those and send them to us because we want to engage with you guys. We want to message back. It's tough, though, when you think about it. We have millions of followers on our different platforms, but we're trying to engage you as much as possible.
I will admit, Drew is a robot, and he would work 24 hours a day if he could. I enjoy it, because if I work long days all day on set, so I'm tired at the end of the day. He'll go to, like, midnight volleyball leagues, and he'll be doing, like, parkour things and whatnot. I'm pooped at the end of the day, but we do make enough time. So usually it's when I'm on set between shoots or moving to locations or whatever it might be is usually when we answer fan questions.
We divide and conquer what we do in our business, too. So Jonathan does the construction. I do a lot of the real estate side. For
hand
production.
Modeling.
And hand modeling, yes. We also divide with different productions that we do. The book, we divided certain aspects. Yeah, so
we like to be busy, though. They always say, if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true because we are efficiency experts. And everything we do, we try and just make sure that we're maximizing the use of our time. Even like on this book tour as well, we originally didn't know if we'd be able to make it down here. And they're like, oh, well, guys, we only have half a day. We're like, more than enough time. Let's do it.
Yeah. So we literally just got in. We flew in, landed, and came straight here right in time when you guys saw us out front there. And then
we leave
right after we sign. We're not leaving until we have a chance to sign every single book and every get a picture with all of you, and we go straight out to San Francisco. So we love what we do. We like to keep busy.
Someone would like to know a manageable home project, renovation project for newbies. What's something to dip your toes in with?
Get a magic eraser. Scrub. Actually, no, joking aside, though, if you want one tool that you want to keep in your toolkit, have a magic eraser, because whether it's grout, whether it's marks on your wall, there's so many things that you can actually use that for to actually clean up your place and make it look a little fresh.
Easiest is always paint, because you can't go wrong, because if you do go wrong, you just paint right over it. So it's all in how you prep it. It's all in how you cover your flooring and things like that. But paint, trim, very easy. There's videos online, if you go to Google or YouTube, that'll help with absolutely anything you need to know.
A fun paint project, which we've done it on the show before as well. If you want to give something fun for your kids, do a chalk wall. It's a chalkboard paint, and you can even we've done built-ins where you create a little bench area, you have a chalk wall, and the kids can leave you messages and whatnot, and it's something that you can just wipe off afterwards. But it makes a fun, easy project.
Our timing's almost perfect because we have one last question. But the other thing too, I'll say is, if you're doing a renovation and you're a family, something I love doing is let the kids be involved in designing their own rooms, because even though you know that you're making the final decisions, it is such a great way for the and you have no idea how much it means to the kids to know that, I picked this out. Even if I show them, usually I'll show them a few different selections of things that I already know would work. But just the kids knowing that they got to choose this bed, or they got to choose the chalkboard wall or something like that, it means the world to them. And all of a sudden, what can be a scary, sad process because they're leaving their old house becomes a fun, exciting thing about the new house.
And by the way, I love it too. When we're out and about, we're meeting you guys, we do face-to-face like what we're doing today. We love it whenever we're at this sort of or out at Walmart or wherever we might be, when kids walk up to us, and it's not the parents pushing the kids over to go say hi to them. The kids are like, hey, Ma, that's Jonathan and Drew from Property Brothers. I love it.
And the parents will be like, who, what, from what?
Yeah, who are these adults that you know that I don't know? It's fun for us because it means that kids are actually getting something out of the show. We're making the show fun and educational. And when kids send us like plans and drawings, it means the world. So they're
last
smarter than
question.
You think.
Yeah. Last question.
I hope it's
Jonathan is
one.
Not, but.
It's good. It's
good?
A good one.
All right.
Good. Phew. Would you sing something for us?
Oh, you saved that for last. I knew it.
Actually, You know, it's funny. When they did the intro, when Angie did her intro, I heard you guys, she said, and they're even, they're singers, or they had a new album, and almost everyone laughed. But the funny thing is, if you don't know, our songs, for Property Brothers at Home on the Ranch, we wrote two songs. We grew up in a ranch. We're country kids at heart. And we used to sit around and just play the guitar with our parents and sing songs. So we wrote these two songs as a tribute to how we grew up when we were renovating that family friend's ranch. We Billboard charted. Hold on. We went to number 24 on the country Billboard charts. Yeah. We went to number 1 on Vivo, and we're number 9 on the Great American Country charts right now. So yeah. It's funny to us. We did it as a little thing to our parents.
We'll give you a little sample if you haven't heard. Hold On's a song about how we spend so much time away on the road that it's nice, and the time you get to spend back at home with family and friends means so much more. So we'll give you a little teaser of it. Then you can go on iTunes. You can download it.
Hold on, hold on, I'm coming home, I'm coming home. It's been too long, way too long, I'm coming home to you.
That's all you got. You gotta go to iTunes. So,
yeah. iTunes. Next,
I'm going to take up competitive German clogging or something.
Yes.
An area I haven't, hit yet.
So the one thing I want to say, too, and I know you have some finishing things that you have to say, but make sure, if you can please, the pictures we get today or even pictures of us just up on stage right now, go on social media, post it on all platforms, use hashtag DreamHome, and try and help us spread the word. Right now, we are actually, I didn't get the stats from the last couple of days, but we were number 20. We were the top 20 books sold on all of Amazon out of every category. So thank you to you guys. But we want to make sure that we get our stats up all the way, because this first week, we want to hit number 1 bestseller on the New York Times bestseller list. And I think we can do it if you help us spread the word. So please do.
Well, I don't think there's much question here, but I hope you've all enjoyed this evening. And this evening has been brought to you by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. And again, we'd very much like to thank Jonathan and Drew Scott, author of Dream Home, the Property Brothers' Ultimate Guide to Finding and Fixing Your Perfect Home, and those of you joining us on the radio and the web. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club, celebrating over 100 years of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you outside.